By the way, do you know what day it is?
It's Bisexual Visibility Day.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on digital stream radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Just warning you, I have no voice whatsoever today, but I'm going to try to get through this, and
this
hopefully...
This might be good for the show in general.
I know, right? We should just do this more often. Yeah,
maybe this
you've got like a lot of words and stuff in here, too.
Yes, I do. Maybe this husky voice will land me a husband or something. Anyway,
Husky voice, you sound like Big Ange with the Cigarellos and Merlot or Shiraz. That's what she drinks.
Love it. Anyway, guys, tonight we're going to be joined in studio by Joe Rapp. He is the author of The Map of Metamorphosis, a watercolor poetry experience. He gives us a breakdown of his journey and the experiences and inspiration for the book. We'll have more on him and his book on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I'm your host. And as always, I'm here with my bitches, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to The Dish. All right. So before we begin on The Dish, I would like to invite our guest who's in studio with us, Joe. You're more than welcome to join us on any of the topics that we're about to discuss before we jump into your segment.
Okay. I'm nervous.
So you can
all right.
So
I don't know what I'm getting into here. So no, we don't every week. Yeah, so it's fine.
Happy that.
So, you know, we've got so much that happened over the weekend. And of course, over the week, we celebrated Pride New Haven. Over the past, 7 days, and it's been amazing. We did talk about a little bit about it last week on the show, but we're going to jump into some weekends. You guys are more than welcome to just let us know what you did, and then we'll move on into some stories. So, Chris, I'm going to toss it over to you.
Okay. So, Friday, we all hung out.
Yeah,
that was nice.
That's right.
We had a barbecue at 1 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. That was always, that's always fun.
Eating meat at 2 o'clock in the morning is great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic. We were playing cards. Trish and I watched a movie. Tom wasn't up for it.
Chris locked himself in his bedroom.
I don't know why I locked the door. I still don't know why. I woke up, my pants were on. I can't explain the things I do. Saturday, I was not able to join the boys to go to Pride. I had to work. But then yesterday, I went to Oktoberfest at Two Roads with Mama. So that was a good time.
Hi, Mama.
We know she's listening.
So it's always fun. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Oktoberfest?
Yeah, no, it's great. Two Roads does it every year. I believe this was their fifth annual one. It's so worth it. It's $25 to get in. Your ticket includes an authentic glass stein. And your first beer is included. And then you really roam around the entire brewery outside. It's all outside. They have massive tents in two different areas. And the area in the back is just surrounded with different food trucks. There's not so much German food, but there's your steak and cheese. There's your holy pierogi food truck. Oh, so goddamn good. The pierogies we had, potato pancakes. There's really so much. And then they have authentic German music as well as non-German music, but it's fun. I had my lederhosen on.
Of course you did.
Of course. Not everyone wears lederhosen, but it's a really good experience. And it's every year they do it on a Saturday and Sunday. So definitely recommend it.
And I will tell you, if you were in the Northeast, no matter what you did, what event you went to, it was one hell of a beautiful weekend.
It was.
The weather was just perfect. There was no humidity. It was super sunny. So anything that you did outdoors really was just incredible.
And you could wear sunglasses, which I needed pretty much all weekend.
Yes.
Sounds about right. Sounds about right.
So Nick, what did you do?
Well, we all hung out on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Did we?
We did.
Oh, yes.
And then I went to the block party on Saturday.
That's right.
And Tom showed up when he wanted to show up.
Well, I had an issue with an iPhone, and I was just going through it with Apple. So anyway, but I got it done, and then I showed up.
I was there with my company. They were tabling and whatnot. And I guess before I had gotten there, a couple of our sponsors for the theater came up, and they had rainbow gear. And they were like, here's a couple. Make sure one goes to Nick. Like three people said that, mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, all right.
You got to make sure that she's all decked out for the festivities.
Yeah, no. You know she would have been screeching if she didn't get any.
Oh, Lord.
Pretty much. I got an IKEA rainbow bag. I'm so excited about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And IKEA, thank you for being a community sponsor, by the way. Did we ever find out if they flew the LGBT flag on their building?
I don't know if they flew the flag, but they definitely plugged.
Oh, I know they promoted.
Yeah.
All of the yep. promotions and stuff for the center,
yeah,
which was amazing.
Other than that, I mean, like, I can't really go into the evening. I can't.
So let's just say that I wasn't feeling too well on Friday. And so I should have laid low and relaxed and then went out, met them on Saturday. And then this got progressively worse as a result of Saturday and then Sunday. And then this is where I'm at today. So hopefully this will be gone within the week.
But we had a really good time. We saw a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, everybody was out, and the block party is just every year. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They took over an entire parking lot this year. So it was really exciting to see how many people and how many community businesses are now a part of a part of Pride New Haven. I mean, you had IKEA, you had a couple different restaurants, you had theaters, you had all of these people that were there to support Pride New Haven, also to plug their shit, but also to give away free stuff and support the gay community. It was really actually kind of beautiful. And that's my biggest takeaway. Actually, that's like one of my biggest takeaways from Pride New Haven. My other biggest takeaway is something that I'm going to put in my back pocket forever.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate
it.
And, you know, like the boys, you know, Friday and Saturday, Nick and I spent together. We were together on Friday as well. And then Sunday, I ended up working and this happened. And so I ended up going in. And typically, what I do is when I go in and I start doing my show for karaoke, I usually open the show. And so I clicked play and I started the song that I normally open with and I hit that first note and people were just like, what?
No.
And then I just said, your mic, it's not happening. Here's the first singer, let's go. And so we ended up working.
All I'm picturing is you hitting that really high note toward the end of this song and it's like, oh no, that ain't gonna be possible. That ain't gonna happen.
I can't do anything. Yeah. Anyway. Overall, it was an amazing weekend. It was an amazing weekend to be gay in New Haven and to be seen and to be visible. And that is fantastic.
And I just want to say, I want to give props again to Patrick Dunn and the New Haven Pride Center.
Right.
Because not only was it so successful, but every single year, it's not just the block party. It's
everything.
A week-long event.
Right.
And he's really bringing so much visibility and support to our community. And we really need to thank him in Haven because for a long time, like I said, and I got slammed for it, the New Haven Pride Center kind of fell away. And it's good to see it back and being supportive. And honestly, the amount of grants he's been getting and sponsorships he's been getting, I'm really excited to see the future of what
they have
the New Haven Pride Center is
going to... employees on the books. They have gotten grants to actually hire over 4 people. So he's got a team of people.
And that's important because it's so detrimental to the LGBT youth in our community, as well as talking about resources for those parents who are recently finding out that their child is coming out as gay or their child wants to transition.
There are
endless amount of resources.
There are
for
support
people.
Groups for parents, support groups for trans kids, gay kids, lesbian, bi, whatever, however you identify, there are support groups within the Pride Center. And reaching out to Patrick, you can literally create whatever you want to create and he'll support it. And top of that, the last time I went there, I was like, Patrick, what's going on here? There were clothes everywhere. He's like, oh, well, you know, we get donations for trans individuals and they can come here and pick out different clothes if they're transitioning from male to female or female to male. And we have an array of options for them. And so just that alone is a huge thing.
That is so cool.
Right.
Yeah.
It is.
Also,
it's beautiful.
I don't know if we talked about this on the show. There is a new, I can't remember the name of it, but there is a new homeless shelter specifically for youth in New Haven. And sadly, we do have a high amount of homelessness in New Haven, but they have allotted, I think it's like 25% of the beds to LGBTQ+ individuals, making the space inclusive and supportive. And it is amazing.
Yeah, that is.
I think one of the coolest things about being from New Haven and getting to celebrate Pride in a small community is the intimacy between individuals. Like, being somebody who's been going out in New Haven and has known all of you since I was coming up and coming out, every single year, whenever you go out in Pride New Haven, I didn't get a chance to go this year, but I've been in previous years, you that sense of community that you have with every individual speaks through in a way where it doesn't, I think, in traditional big cities. Like, you know everybody, mm-hmm. you can relate to everybody, mm-hmm. you have similar experiences, and I think that that the way that people stay connected to each other in small pride communities shines through, especially around pride season when everybody decides to get involved.
I think you're 100% correct. I mean, we are a small but fierce community.
Small but fierce.
That's right.
And we know each other and we support one another for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, we walk into the block party and it's like 20 minutes or 30 minutes to get to the bar because it's like, hi, kiss, hug, yeah, exactly. this, that. Mm-hmm. And it's right. like, it's great. It's
very
amazing.
Personal. It's yeah. very personal when
yeah,
you're there.
You run into so many people. Like, for example, we ran into one of our previous guests, Tony Ferriolo, who's just amazing. He's been on our show before. He was mm-hmm. actually one of our transgender spotlight for the month of November in 2017. Believe it or not, it's been 2 years.
Yeah, wow. Is it time?
What?
Put the lid on the show? No. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh. But anyway, he was amazing. We had an awesome conversation. We've been speaking about opportunities for him to come back and talk about some of the new things that he's been doing, including with the Pride New Haven Center. But overall, I think it was a super duper weekend.
You just said super duper.
He did. I was going to let it go because I'm already going to be picking on you about your voice for the rest of the show. But
is super duper not allowed?
Before No, it's not. But before we move on, I want to throw it over. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your weekend, Joe?
God, how bad can I get right now?
As bad as you need to.
Vagina, okay. Boob, pussy, cock, fuck.
Done. Great.
Okay. Just don't say names.
Copy that. No,
yeah, drop the names. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying names to protect myself.
That's important,
smart
bitch.
Man.
You wrote a book. You can get sued.
that's very true. Number one thing I would tell any new author is, like, I have people on Instagram that are like, oh, what do we tell the new author? I'm like, get a great lawyer and ask them about everything before you put it in writing. Like, seriously.
Noted.
Please, noted. Yeah, I've been hooking up with this guy who goes to University of New Haven, and that's been great. He is under 21, which is a new experience for me because I tend to not hook up with guys that are under 21, but he's cute, and it's like...
But the stamina, though.
You would think.
Oh, Lord have
one
mercy.
One would think, yeah. I mean,
I think I opened the door.
No, I mean, honestly, it's fine. My sexual issues aside, it's like... So that was good. That was Saturday night and then Sunday night. And then he was like, you should come to this college bonfire with me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, no. Like, oh, sorry. I have to like pick my sister up from karate. It's like, my sister doesn't even take karate. I'm not going to this thing.
Anything to get away from those four locos and Jaeger bombs.
College is a nightmare for me. When I didn't even live on campus when I went to college, because the idea of living 2 feet away from anybody is my idea of a personal hell. And it's also just like, college is not a hygienic place. College is not a place where, no. So I'm like,
no. Like, super busy.
No, I'm not going. And he's like, he's in a fraternity, which I think you can be like, oh, that's so hot. It's like, no, this is not a porn. That's like a bunch of guys that are completely disgusting that have not cleaned their fridge. They have not washed, they have not cleaned their bathroom. Like, I want nothing to do with that. So that didn't happen, but the sex was fine.
So he had a good weekend.
I had a good weekend. I actually wish that I knew it was Pride New Haven, which is really lame that I didn't, because I go every freaking year. I live out in California, for anybody listening, but I do come back to Connecticut very often because I have really close ties with my family here, and I travel a lot for work, so I'm between Boston and New York often, so I like to stop in New Haven, like, go out to the bars, see everybody that I want to see, and, like, plenty that I don't. And then try to hop out early. But this weekend, I just didn't make it out. And then, you know what? Well, you were busy. I was otherwise occupied. But I did drop my phone and crack the shit out of the screen. So I got what I deserved.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Sorry, you're not the only one, believe me.
But I see that you fixed it, so.
Yeah, I have AppleCare. So, you know
that's
what?
That's beautiful.
No harm done.
And we have a store here in New Haven, so you can just walk in and say, fix my shit, bitch.
I really can't.
So it's funny that you mentioned that you're from California. Believe it or not, California is one of our biggest markets when it comes to listenership for the show. So hopefully, once we post all of your social media stuff and everything, you'll get a good
response
from it. Because
that would be amazing. I hope none of the guys I'm hooking up with in LA hear this.
Well, if you do, we have them
Hello
in studio,
boys.
So we're going to abuse them.
You can edit this out.
And then we'll send them over your way.
I'll text you back, I promise.
Yeah, right. For a book signing or something like that, right?
Oh my God. I feel like we have two Chris Mattoons at that side of the table
today.
That's
right.
What is that?
Christmas Tuesday is tomorrow.
That is this.
I'm sorry. I haven't drank enough to understand all the lingo yet, but I'll get there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I thank you for sharing.
Basically,
what happened was she got laid.
Chris has a rotation.
Oh, no, no, no.
So Chris has a rotation.
You can't not have a rotation in this state. It's so damn small.
I don't know. Once you pass 30, you're like,
that's why I started going for people out of state. I was like, yeah, I'm done with people in Connecticut.
Apparently, you're done with people out of state, too. But that's okay. Anyway.
I'm just excited I haven't hooked up with anybody on this podcast.
Anyway.
Proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
Hi, everyone.
Fuck her.
Anyway. No, not me. Never me. Let's get into some stories, because obviously we have to get to break and also take care of our guests in the studio.
So, he just said he hasn't slept with any of us.
That's okay.
I was joking. Chris? I wasn't joking. The pug Tom? Was a joke, but not that.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
So, Tom.
So,
jingle stories, bells, right? Jingle
all right,
bells.
Yeah, right? Thanks, Dave. All right, so listen, let's kick into some stories. I want to talk about the fact that the Emmys were last night, and with it came a huge win for Pose star Billy Porter, as he makes history winning for Best Lead Actor in a Drama category and making him the first ever openly gay man of color to win the coveted award. In addition to his phenomenal win, the visibility that the show Pose itself has shown on the LGBT community is further proof that when you cast people in the LGBT community to play roles for gays, bisexual, and transgender people, you get a story that is authentic, delivered in a way that only members in our community can do and understand, period. So the moral of that little whole thing is cast people that live those lives so that you can better understand and get a better projection of what our lives are actually like. It's also worth noting that the show Pose itself has already shattered glass ceilings by being the show with the most transgender actors in television history. That was huge for Billy Porter.
And also, wasn't it renewed for 2 seasons the first episode aired?
The first episode of season 2 was by far the most heart-wrenching episode ever. We learned, or at least some of the youngsters in our community learned, about Heart Island and what history it has with the gay community and people with AIDS and HIV. And all those people that we lost in the midst of anywhere between 1985 and 1995. So there was so much. It was so heavy, but it was so important that people knew what that episode meant to the community.
Which, just to bring me to my next topic before interrupting you, because I'm doing that right now. So I just want to say, like, for this specifically, Billy Porter, you were saying, you know, he brings all this special LGBTQ+ knowledge to this role. But on top of it, somebody like Billy Porter not only lived through a period of time where he knew and saw what was going on in the community, but people like Billy Porter and us take the time to learn about our history. It's hard to find it, but more and more you see people writing books, people putting things out about our history. And it's so important that if people are cast that are not of the LGBTQ+ community, dive into a fucking book, learn about our history, because it's deep and it's dark and it's beautiful and it's scary and it's important. And that all comes into what Billy Porter brings to the Pose role.
That's right.
And more importantly, these books that you're speaking of that these authors are putting out there, they're ending up in the school systems our nation now. It's becoming a thing where different school systems, including a school in Mike Pence's home state of Indiana, are integrating these stories and these events into the curriculum for their students who are growing up to learn about history of the United States.
You know what bothered me? The other day, I was in a meeting with a group of people at work. I wouldn't say it bothered me, but it was eye-opening. We decided to hang a pride flag at the theater to support Pride New Haven, but also the first show of our season is a love story that takes place in the 1950s about a Caucasian and African-American man that fall in love, and there are in Texas. And so there are so many levels to this story. It's a beautiful love story, but that's going to stay up the entire time. And when we decided to order the flag, we decided to order the flag with the brown and black stripe on it. And people kept asking me why those stripes were on the flag. And I'm like, this just happened a couple years ago. This just came out of Philadelphia a couple years ago. And yeah, I've said my piece about it. I've had issues with it, but I'm starting to realize why it's so important and why queer spaces for a very long time were not inclusive and why it's important to have these things on the flag. And so having these conversations with individuals makes me realize that not only the LGBTQ plus community, but the heterosexual community really needs to be taught what has happened and what's going on in the gay community from day to day.
And that's awesome that your theater is actually, actually opening season with a story that happens to do with a homosexual couple having a black couple, a black man and a white man be in a relationship, especially in a state like Texas. Believe it or not, that's the whole reason why we had the whole issue with the sodomy laws. It was Texas that actually was a state that was trying to criminalize sodomy, and the Supreme Court ruled as a result of the cases that were coming out of that state. Mm-hmm. So it's huge to see that represented on stage, especially on a stage like, you know, your theater, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's really powerful, especially for me, particularly because I work there and because we've never seen this on the stage before at Long Wharf Theater. There have been themes of homosexuality or the LGBT community throughout a piece, but never an entire show dedicated to the historical aspects of what the LGBTQ plus community went through. And just talking about queer spaces that were segregated and why the black and brown stripe are so important. In this story, it talks about two different bars that are literally directly across the street, and one is for white people and one is for people of color. And the people of color cannot go anywhere near the white bar, vice versa, because of the owner who owns both.
And this is, of course, pre, you know, civil rights movement in the 1950s in a segregated South. So this is why stories like this need to be told so that people can know what happened.
It's part of our history. Some of the darkest parts of our history can never be tucked away. They need to be really, you have to dive into them and learn from those mistakes. Yeah. And that's what's so important, especially, which is why I'm studying history. It is important to teach those things and to never forget
them. And that's why I opened with Billy Porter being honored and winning that award, because what I'm starting to see more and more every day is that in mainstream TV, movies and stuff, you're seeing the homosexual community or the LGBT community being represented truthfully in a lot of the documentaries that are happening, a lot of the movies that are being created, the series. Ryan Murphy, you're a fucking genius. Thank you. Because you're literally taking our lives and our experiences and you're portraying them using people of our own community and telling it right.
Right. And even going along with films and television shows who are casting people that will portray a gay couple. When you look at different commercials, like the companies that are putting their names on the lines, when you look at Crest or Colgate.
Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, there's so many more and more. Every day that I turn on the television, I'm starting to notice a gay couple or a lesbian couple or someone who's going through transitioning, even for one of the makeup companies. They're starting to be more visible with that and more supportive of the entire LGBTQ plus community.
That's right. And, you know, so that I could wrap up my part and let the boys get to their stories, I just want to also quickly, say thank you to Patricia Arquette, who won Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series or Movie for playing the role of Dee Dee Blanchard on Hulu's The Act. In her acceptance speech, she seized the opportunity to bring awareness to transgender rights and remembrance of her sister, Alexis Arquette, a transgender activist and actor who transitioned in the early 2000s, who later lost her life in 2016 after suffering from cardiac arrest related to HIV. In her acceptance speech, she said the following. She said, "I just have to say that I'm grateful to be working. I'm grateful at 50 to be getting the best parts of my life, and that's great," Arquette said. "But in my heart, I'm so sad I lost my sister Alexis, and the trans people are still being persecuted. I'm in mourning. Alexis and I Alexis will be for the rest of my life until we change, will be in my heart and will be at the forefront of what I'm trying to do for the rest of my life until trans people are not persecuted." In addition to that, she implored people to give transgender folks a chance, give them jobs, They're human beings. Let them have jobs. Let's get rid of the biases that we have everywhere. And I think that a message like that resonates, and you're starting to see a lot of that with people like Ryan Murphy. Almost his entire cast is entirely transgender, and it's beautiful to see. And so I'm really happy that she took that opportunity, and I'm really happy that she took the time to honor her sister who passed away. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, that's one of the best moments that I took from last night's Emmys.
Take a sip of water.
I can't.
That was beautiful, and thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Anyway.
So, I want to, since we opened the show with Bi Visibility, I wanted to talk a little bit about it. Completely off the cuff, though. So today, we do this thing at my job where we do what is today's national day? Once a week. And so today, something came out. It wasn't Bi Visibility Day. And so one of my coworkers responded and said, hey, you know, it's also Bi Visibility Day, and I think it's important that we highlight that. So I want to talk about the fact that we should highlight bisexuality, but I also want to talk about why and if we think bisexuality isn't being highlighted enough because of the community that it is. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like a lot of people don't embrace it and come out, and then we want to support them and have them be a part of the LGBTQ plus community, but at the same time, I feel like it's this weird give and take where we don't see a lot of people say, hey, I'm bi.
Well, there's absolutely a stigma that comes along with identifying as bisexual, especially from the gay community.
Even within our own community.
More than probably any other community, to be honest, because some people will stigmatize those people who identify as bisexual as, oh, they're just not ready to come out as gay. Or you're confused, exactly. And that's why I think that the stigma covers that.
I had somebody say to me, we were talking about Pride New Haven this weekend, and they were like, I don't want to go to Pride New Haven. I'm like, you should totally go to Pride New Haven. You're bi, like, you have, like, you love the community, you're supportive of the community. She's like, I've been to so many festivals where they tell me I'm not gay enough.
But according to who?
Well, I mean, in
their own standards.
Hearing that makes me so angry, because it's like our community as a whole, we need to support one another, no matter if you're bi and you're a male with a female, or you decide to be with a male as a male, or vice versa. It doesn't matter. We need to be able to embrace people for who they are. Mm-hmm. Gender is fluid. Sexuality is fluid, except for with me. I'm a male, and I really just can't get over dick. But the reality is, it's a thing, and we have to not only as a community. I think if we were able to embrace the bi community more, we would see more visibility within the bi community.
Well, here's the thing. Our own community needs to stop to try to put these people in a box. They have a right to be who they are. Just because you're a bi person, you decide to date a woman, doesn't make you straight, or vice versa. You're bisexual. You can be in a monogamous heterosexual relationship with a man and woman, or vice versa, be with a man, or a woman, or woman, and still be bisexual. You don't have to be anything other than who you are. And what we need to work on as a community is stop telling them that you need to pick a side, that you need to, oh, you're dating a woman now, then you're straight. Oh, you're dating a man now, then you should be gay. No, you should be who you are. And if you want to do both, that is your prerogative. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's the biggest problem that we have in our community, is that we are doing it ourselves. Mm-hmm. To our very own people. And bisexuality, or people who are bisexual, are an important and integral part of our community. Mm-hmm.
Can I say that I think this is a side effect of something that exists in the gay community, because we have been so hurt as a community that we evolved into a place where we could say it's us or them. Right? You're gay or you're straight. You're the one oppressing me. You're the one who is stopping me from being who I want to be. And so naturally, I think as being LGBT folds more into the spotlight, I think gay men who have been hurt are really likely to look at someone as bisexual and say, you are a vision of someone who has hurt me. And so I think it develops into this idea of like, oh, you're not gay enough. You don't adopt the practices that I have adopted. You don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race. You don't wear this type of thing. You don't go out to these bars. You don't socialize the way I socialize. And all of a sudden, what that does is it divides a community. And we can get ahead of that by asking the right questions and by saying, you know, what does our community, how do we make this mountain bigger for all the people that come after us so they can see farther and farther ahead? And we do that by saying that our community stands by the ethics that you can be who you want and you can love who you want and you can feel what you want at any time. Maybe last week I was more gay than I was this week. All right, fine. Live your life the way you want to.
Right.
And don't act out of fear.
And I think it's also really important. I think that is such a beautiful point you just made. Like, I mean, on fucking point. Wow. But I also think it's really important for the gay community to realize that, yes, we've struggled and we've been hurt and the entire community has been put down. But at the same time, you have to take a step back and look at it from somebody who is bisexual, right? And you fall in love with somebody. And then you have to share this part of yourself with them. Do you know how many people I've known in my life that have lost somebody they love because they can't handle the fact that they're bisexual and they're afraid of this or they're afraid of that? And that is another level at which the bisexual community has to confront every day when they're dating, when they fall in love. Is this person going to accept me for who I am? Will I still be able to hold this relationship down?
And sometimes their own partners don't understand. One of my very good friends, you know, she's bisexual and she wanted to participate in the activities of the weekend or the week. And she gets a question from her own, from her own lover, like, why would you go there? Well, just because you're in a monogamous, considered straight relationship, that doesn't necessarily mean that just because I'm dating a man and I'm a woman that I'm no longer bi. Mm-hmm. I'm still bi. This is still my community. And it's still something that I want to do and engage in, not necessarily sexually, but culturally and community-wise.
Right.
And be with my people. Because, you know, in the end, that's what we are. We're all of our peoples. And we have to stick together. You know, the B in LGBT is part, like one of the, it's a very important integral part of our community. And we need to figure out, like you said, you know, build those mountains higher so those people that try to oppress and hurt us can't cross that threshold. And that gives us an advantage in being able to figure out what we need to do to make sure that we are inclusive for everybody.
Yeah, but I think Joe really, really hit the nail on the head, because if you think about it, what do gay or lesbian individuals or trans individuals do with the bisexual community? We consistently ask them to come out because we want them to support us so that we don't look at them in the way that Joe was just saying. He was saying we look at them in a way of the oppressor, right? You're a bisexual male dating a female. Why aren't you out as a bisexual male? Because as you're in your current situation, you're technically heterosexual and a threat to our community. But that's not the case, right? So I really think it's perspective and really mm-hmm. changing the entire conversation around bisexuality and the community as a whole.
That's
and
right.
coming together so that we can embrace one another. And if I don't know. It's a difficult conversation because, yes, I want bisexuals to come out and be strong and powerful and proud. But at the same time, it's just a really difficult topic to cover.
But they need to come out as who they are and not how other people want them to come out.
Or not come out at all.
Right.
If you're just bisexual, you're bisexual, period. You don't have to pick a side. You can do both. And we can love you for who you are and for loving both and for still being a part of our community. But I think the most important thing is we're four gay men sitting here. We're not bisexual. We can't really speak to that.
Oh,
so if you're a person who is bisexual and you are listening to our show and you would love to contribute to the conversation and tell us really what it's about, what you feel, how you feel, how you're seen, how you see our community, let us know. Reach out to us and talk to us. Give us your perspective because I think it is important.
Can I ask a question for the four of us?
Yes.
Has anyone around this table been with somebody who's identified as bisexual? Bisexual.
I have.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Just wanted to be clear.
Okay. I mean, I've been with women. I came out when my first sexual encounter was with a woman. I slept with girls for 2 or 3 years.
Turn her mic off.
Sleeping with guys.
I'm just kidding.
What'd you say?
Turn her mic off.
Oh, no. No, but I think when you really think about what could be difficult for a bisexual person, I mean, and this is not me trying to comment on somebody else's reality, but there are so many pieces of confusion that come with this, right? Like, we live in a society where being gay is a little easier now. It is easier for me now to find my tribe than it was 10 years ago. It's easier for me now to understand what might work for me and to get informed and to get education and to know, okay, when I sleep with someone, how do I act? When I feel intimate, how do I act? But it's so much more difficult for a bisexual person, not just because now you have, I don't know, more balls to juggle, literally, but also because...
That was good.
Yeah, I got you. But also because, you know, how do you go, even machismo culture, how do I go back to a woman and say, yes, I did have anal sex, or yes, I did date men? You know, there are so many things from a side we don't see, even from straight culture, that is bombarding that person. That mm-hmm. must be so confusing.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%.
Well said, yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, if we can get people who live in that truth and live that reality every day to come and talk, we're more than happy to have you on the show and definitely have that discussion, because it needs to be had. All right. Well, thank you. That was an amazing conversation. Christopher, would you like to jump into yours?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, let's take a break.
So here's...
I want to talk about this book.
Okay.
Hold on. I want to plug one thing before we go on break.
Okay.
It'll take 2 seconds because we were talking about it earlier. I want to plug the first show of our season. It's called On the Grounds of Belonging. Tagline, before love is love, love was dangerous. It's a world premiere at Long Wharf Theater, and it's directed by... written by Ricardo Perez Gonzalez. Opening preview start October 9th, running through November 3rd.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And if you're part of the New Haven Pride Center, you get a discount. Yes.
Just saying. All right, well, listen, we're going to take a break. We'll leave you with some music. And when we come back, we have Joe Rapp and his new book with us here. We're going to break it down and tell you all about it. Here we go.
Hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. 'Cause if you
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Time by the incredible Pat Riley, a previous guest of ours. And now we're joined in studio by our guest, who's actually been with us the whole time. Our guest is Joe Rapp. He's the author of the Map 2 Metamorphoses, a watercolor poetry experience. I would like to officially welcome you to the studio and also welcome you to the show. We're going to have an amazing conversation about your book, so I'm super excited. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited. This is my first podcast. Also, I just want to say out loud, I am thrilled.
So we popped his cherry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Three at once. You're a champ.
Yeah. My first time. It was great.
All right. So why don't we start off? Typically what we do is if you were via Skype, we would ask that you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what prompted you to write the book. And then we'll jump into the conversation.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. So my name is Joe Rapp. I am 26 and I'm from Connecticut, from New Haven, which makes this extra intimate. I love that I'm here with people that I know and love. And this is my first experience getting to talk about my work. Phenomenal. I wrote The Map of Metamorphoses 2 years ago. Took me 2 years to publish it, get it out. I self-published the book and I wrote the book in a state that I can only describe as fever dream. I wrote the book in about 5 weeks during a period between employment. So I had a lot of free time and it was a really thoughtful period of my life. So I was 23 years old and I was between jobs and I decided that I was going to make a real commitment to getting ahead of my mental health and the state of my mind. And so I went back to therapy for the first time in 5 years and I got a chance to speak to a therapist who happened to be a trauma specialist. By no design or whatsoever, I just happened to get to speak to a therapist who specialized in trauma, specialized in children and families, and getting to work through some difficult stuff with her. My book sort of just came out. It was a really unusual experience. I'm not sure I can replicate it, which makes it really interesting when I think about what I want to do in the future and my future works. It's definitely an interesting place that I was in when I wrote the book, but I hate cliches. Truly, I despise them, but it came pouring out of me. I could not have stopped this book from being written if I wanted to. The book was finished by Christmas. I very much caved into my house to write it. I spent about 2 months at my kitchen table. And then once the entire book was written, I had a weird vision to illustrate it. And I had never done art before. And there's a really interesting story behind that. I'll probably talk about it later. But I wrote my book. And then I decided that I was going to self-publish it. And I did. And I got it on Amazon, which is up to anybody who wants to be an author out there. Amazon is a pain in the butt to work with. Jeff Bezos he's really taken over. But it was a phenomenal experience. I'm glad I did it. And then I started attracting a community of people on Instagram that were interested in my work. And it's all gone from there.
So let's talk a little bit about the fact that you were 23 when you wrote this book.
Sure.
So we've all had trauma around this table, mm-hmm. like significant trauma. At the age of 23, I had been through plenty. I was in therapy. We've all been in therapy. But how did you go about taking these experiences that you've gone through at such a young age and put it on paper and share it with people?
Yeah, well, first of all, I definitely would not have been able to write this book if I didn't have some phenomenal people supporting me. So I think that helps. My therapist was a lifesaver for me in a time where I was incredibly confused, not only about why I was thinking one way, but behaving a different way, but also in getting in touch with some things that I wasn't comfortable enough to approach. I've been writing forever. One of my interesting Connecticut gay story is that when I was 15 and 16, I started writing on Tumblr, which is when I really got interested in the internet and I really got interested in media and creation and being able to share my work with other people. And I had kind of an interesting writing following on Tumblr. And part of it was just like prose, like paragraphs about being gay or living through some of the stuff that I lived through in my adolescence. And then part of it was poetry. And so I'd always been writing. And so the natural expression of my creativity could not have come out in a way that wasn't this book.
So do you feel comfortable talking a little bit about what inspired the book? What type of trauma did you go through that was so important for you to share with the world?
Absolutely. So When I was young, I had a very abusive stepfather, and I did not realize the nature of the abuse until much later. And I think that is one of the most difficult things that any trauma patient has to deal with, is that you never realize what you're going through until after the fact. And I had a mother who was an alcoholic. I had a stepfather who was abusive verbally my whole life and physically at a point in my life. At the same time, my mother's alcoholism escalated, as it does, right? It's just the culture of a family can really start to break down when one person does. And I did the only thing that I knew how to do, which was try to make sense of my pain. And when you are 15 or 16 or 17, however old you are, you make sense of your abuse by asking yourself questions, not by asking your abuser questions, because you're never going to understand why someone hurt you.
Right.
And that was something that I really got in touch with during this period in my life, was that I had spent so much time trying to rationalize and ask questions about how could someone, how did somebody, what drove them to do this? Because that's the human mind. That's mm-hmm. the human condition. I when I don't understand something, I'm going to do anything that I can to make sense of that. And how you make sense of that is by hurting yourself. Right. I must have deserved this. I must have done something. I need to change. You know, it's all of those questions. And when you're so young, I think that there's no other avenue to go down except for self-harm. And that was where I turned to. So when I was 17, I was removed from my house by DCS, which is the Department of Child Services. And I had a choice. I could go to a group home or I could get emancipated. And I chose to get emancipated. It was really difficult. I dropped out of high school when I was 17. I lived kind of a weird young adult life. I ended up moving to California when I was 18 and eventually worked some very interesting jobs and went to college out there and started. I decided to take ownership over my life. And it wasn't until I was in really the throes of my young adult life, being 23, that all of these things that, you know, you would traditionally expect someone at that age to begin to materialize started happening to me. You know, I got a permanent place. I settled down and I got a job that I really cared about. And I found people in my life that loved me. But I wasn't happy, and there was a lot of stuff that I hadn't reconciled inside. And so I had to ask the right questions to figure out, well, what is that? What's in there? And when you go, you never take time to think about, well, who really is still in there? And it wasn't until I was 23 that I got the chance to sit down and ask those questions, and that became my book.
So I just wanted to quickly say, you posted something on your Facebook, and we have been Facebook friends for quite a long time. But when we started talking about the possibility of you coming on the show, I went through your Facebook stalking. Imagine that. But I found something that you had posted that really highlights the whole process that you went through writing this book. And you said the following quote: "I wrote a book about trauma, and I painted my pain, joy, love, and sorrow, all the things I did not understand spilled across the pages until all that was left was me. Sitting around my creation is a surreal feeling. In each one of my illustrations, all of my words, they're in a story so real that it literally just leapt out of the canvas and manifested into this book. And I'm not afraid to talk about the hard stuff anymore. I'm just not. For you, art is like sharing your pain with the world and making it a little less lonely. And so do you think that what you wrote there really is encompasses what your book entails, what it's all about?
Yeah, I think people are alone with trauma. I think we live in a world where people feel alone. I think inherently people are narcissists. You know, we're always going to think it was the worst for me. No one can understand what I've been through. Nobody can feel what I've felt. And that's a human feeling. You know, we're never not going to feel that. But I think when you're able to approach the things that scare the living shit out of you, mm-hmm. I think other people can get inspired by that bravery. And that's what I wanted to bring to people that read my book.
It is also important to point out, though, that it is okay to say, woe is me, every now and then. Like, so many people have that mentality where, you know, if you're having a bad day or you're going through some really stressful things, when people say, you know, well, kids are starving in Africa or children are being bombed in Syria. Yeah, there's always going to be something worse, but it is also important for your self-healing to accept that you have gone through some shit.
Yeah, so that was just it. I think one of the reasons why I think people have a really hard time approaching themselves as a trauma patient is because nobody wants to admit that they are a victim. And that is an inherent want and need, right? Nobody wants to admit weakness mm-hmm. because that's what happens when you say out loud, I was abused, I was harmed. And it wasn't until, the moment I discovered this, I was talking to my therapist and was describing to her events in my childhood, these episodic memories that I had that would not go away. We all have these, mm-hmm. right? We all have these things where we think back and we're like, whoa, fuck, that really stands out to me. And I was describing to her about this time where I was locked in a crawl space. And I wrote one of my favorite pieces in the book is writing about that experience. And she said to me, yeah, flashbulb memories are really common in trauma patients. That's what we're here to work through.
Flashbulb memories. Can you break that down?
Yeah. So when you experience a trauma, like when you get hit and you're in a car, right? Your brain locks onto that moment and that incident because it says, hey, this could happen again in the future. This was so painful. You must remember it to prevent it next time. Mm. That is the root of PTSD. And so it's like if you've ever been in a car accident, right? The last thing you remember is headlights and a shaking car and the point of impact and the point of collision. That's a flashbulb memory. That's your mind telling you, hey, you have to remember this because if you do, you're going to know how to beat this next time. It's the root of PTSD. So when you think back to moments that connect you to that incident, it's really easy for you to recall those specific visceral moments and those subsequent memories that built up to that. And that's how pain manifests in the mind. And that was the first time when she said to me, that's really common in patients that experience a trauma. Let's talk about how you deal with that PTSD. It's the first time I ever heard somebody say to me, you know, that's trauma.
This book seems like it can encompass basically anybody, but for you, you're a part of the gay community. How is that reflected in this book, and how is that reflected in the trauma that you share in this book, or joy that you share in this book?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I have to be so transparent about this. Do I think that my pain was a result of me being gay, and that is part of the reason why I had such a turbulent relationship with my mother and stepfather? I will never know because I can't rationalize that person. But I think that me being LGBT always made me feel like an outsider. And when you put that onto a history of abuse, you know, that I really started experiencing when I was 7, from being, whether it was being hit or whether it was being called names or whether it was being told that I had to do something or be a certain way or that I wasn't going to be accepted or that who I was wasn't good enough. I think that being LGBT and being part of a community of outsiders really compounded some of the difficult issues that I was dealing with. And I grew up in a world where I don't think there was much support for the LGBT reaching out. I went to an all-guys Catholic high school, which was very difficult. It was not fun. It was not sexy.
It never is. I mean, religion and homosexuality really have never been something that could cohesively exist in most of our experiences, right?
Right. And so I did not have a clear support network, at least not until I really broke free from that. And I went home, home being California, which I consider my home because home is where you make it. Right. But the second chapter of my book talks about love. And that was really exciting for me to get to write because it was very much in hindsight. And on the subject of being LGBT, I got a chance to talk about my first real love, who was, that's a phenomenal love story. It's a really interesting one. And the one thing I really love about my book is that it maps my journey and takes you through me in my youngest self, through me and my young adult self, falling in love and having to deal with all the traditional things that you might deal with while being in love, but also from a place of trauma. And dating somebody else who had experienced that too. I think that like attracts like, and when you've mm-hmm. been through something really, you know, when you've been through an experience, you look for people in which to share an experience. And that was my first relationship. And it was really interesting to get to explore that. And, the entire second chapter of my book is about finding mutuality and finding common ground in somebody that I absolutely loved and who I really felt like understand me. And then the loss of that and what that does to a person who is already conditioned for loss. And all of that takes shape and form when you think about trauma, when you think about where you come from and who you are getting to experience that. You know, there's a piece in my book that says how one of my favorite pieces in my book about loving somebody else that has experienced a trauma is he asks me how it is I can see in him all the hurt that no one else can. And I say that after experiencing a lifetime of weakness, one becomes alert to it in others.
That's so beautiful. So when you speak about loving somebody who's also been through trauma, how do you navigate that relationship, right? Because you don't want your relationship to become all about the trauma,
right?
But you find a way to support each other in a different way, right?
I think in an ideal world, yes. And it's so difficult because for me in that point in my life, I didn't do that and I wasn't here for myself. And that's a really great segue into really the last chapter of my book. So my book is split into three chapters. They follow the transformative process of the butterfly, which is not a symbol I love, but it is the best symbol I could use to describe what I went through. And my three chapters are weakness, chrysalis, and metamorphosis. And weakness is very much about abuse, loss, what childhood trauma does to a person. Chrysalis is very much about the power of love, and I think how it can trap you, and I think how you can trap yourself when you fall in love. Mm-hmm. And then metamorphosis is about coming out of that. And the only way that I could reconcile coming into and coming out of love was to assert the fact that you are never going to be able to come to terms with your abuser. You're never going to be able to come to terms with your love. You're never going to be able to come to terms with yourself unless you approach the things that are most difficult to you. So to answer your question, I don't think that when you're dating somebody that has also been through a trauma and when that relationship capitalizes on two really difficult past lives, you're able to move forward in a way that's healthy and safe until you move forward with yourself.
So if you're in a relationship with somebody who has never been through trauma, which I'm sure you've experienced mm-hmm. as well, how then do you share that with that person? And how then do you explain to him or her how they should best support you if needed?
That's another really great question.
I've been doing this for 3 years. Yeah.
You know what? I don't have all the answers here, but I will say this. Nobody else is ever going to be able to understand your pain because sometimes you don't even understand your pain. And then I think the number one thing I could say to somebody who has been through some tough shit and is dating somebody who is genuine and really loves them and maybe doesn't have that experience is give them time. Give them yourself slowly. And know that one day they will have all of you if you really, really fucking love them.
Mm-hmm.
But give them time because think about how long it has taken you to get to where you are with your pain. And then ask yourself the question, how long should I give the person that loves me and wants to be here next to me with my pain?
Wow.
Boom.
So I have one more question about relationships. So I feel as though personally, because I've been there, somebody who has been through trauma tends to, like you say, attract like, right? So we are finding people that are sometimes damaged, right?
Yep.
So we're in these situations that are really unhealthy. How then do we find our way out of it? How then do we recognize what we're going through and really move forward?
I love this. So part of the reason why I think people who might consider themselves as damaged or victims or trauma are likely to attract other people who they view as damaged goods is because we are human beings and we always want to correct the narrative. We always want to be able to find the thing that hurts and rewrite that story so it's a happy ending. We want to find the person who reminds us the most of the love we never had so that we can prove to ourselves that we deserve the love that we never got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that need, that instinctual human desire, that we are drawn to other people who have suffered. How you get yourself out of that cycle is by realizing the only narrative that I can correct is the one within myself. I need to go to the places within me that are really fucking difficult. I need to ask myself the question, why was my mom never here for me? How could she do this? How could someone make this choice? How come I still flinch when I hear someone's footsteps walking down the hall, right? I need to come to terms with these incredibly powerful flashbulb memories and realize that that is the only narrative that I am responsible for reframing and rewriting in my life. And I think when you do that, all of a sudden, well, like starts to attract like again, right? And
right.
You start to see and you start to find the people who have also done that.
Wow. That, I'm, like, I'm like,
speechless.
I'm sitting here. I'm like a little surprised.
She's taking pointers.
I'm surprised by you. You really have surprised me. You're enlightened.
Great.
You're woke, girl. You're woke.
I want to preface this conversation by saying that sometimes I spend a lot of time writing in my journal and doing really beautiful things, and sometimes I am passed out on a warehouse floor, so nobody's above anything.
I mean, we've all been there.
I knew there was something See, like attracts like.
Let's just say this, that, you know, regardless of what experiences or how you cope with them or how you come up on top, you still have to, you know, at some point in your life rely or deal with the fact that it's going to get messy.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
I think it's also important to note, too, I feel like people that have been through trauma and, like you say, like attracts like, we tend to find ourselves in a situation with somebody that may or may not be perfect for us or may or may not be great, and we'll destroy it if it's not something we have to fix. And that's something that that personally I've been really diving into every day. I've been single for like a year now. And just really kind of thinking about, why is it that we always want to try and fix somebody, right? We always want to we love this person. This person is perfect for us, but we have to constantly change the person to make it work. I mean, I think that's part of what you're talking about when you're writing this book.
Yeah, because somewhere, I think inside of all of us, the real instinct and the real drive is that deep human desire to fix ourselves and to fix the things that we've been through.
I'm telling you.
Very insightful young man.
It's, I am left speechless, but today it's okay because I need a break.
You literally can't talk. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to swipe this from you. So here's the book. Again, it's called The Map to Metamorphosis and a watercolor poetry experience. You guys definitely should get it. It is available on Amazon, right? Currently just Amazon?
It is currently available on Amazon. And as a really exciting note, my hardcover comes out in 1 month. It
awesome.
Is a completely different, it's a completely redesigned cover. I painted the front cover of this one, and I'm so excited
it's
for...
It's beautiful.
Thank you. I'm really excited for the book to continue to grow and evolve and to continue seeing what I write next, so... Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome, but we're not done with you
yet.
So what I wanted to ask of you, we talked about this off air while we were on break, was, is there something in this book, one of maybe your favorite passages or anything that you would like, or you, if you want to, you don't have to, read for us?
Yeah, gosh. I have some, pick a topic.
Well, I wrote down since we talked about it, the locked in the crawled space. I think that could be powerful, but if we want to go somewhere lighter, we can talk about chapter 3 somewhere.
Yeah, I would happily do that.
Fantastic. I always think it's always good to hear an author who really goes through the time of putting something to words, read it out loud
right.
and say it, because it has a different meaning when stuff like that happens.
Thank
and we
you.
Can say Joe Rapp was here on Gay Talk 2.0 first.
and he read it. That's right.
The final chapter approaches forgiveness and then the book's last moments. And I think forgiveness is a really, really important part of reconciling past trauma. And I want to say this is a passage, not the one I'm about to read, but this is a passage that I think is critical to understanding where you go next as a person. And I wrote this in a very personal note to my mother, which is in the final chapter, and that line is, I did not forgive you because you deserved to be forgiven. I forgave you because I deserved to be made free.
And that's important.
And it's so important. That reframing of what forgiveness is and what self-evolution is so important when you think about your experience, because they are always only going to be your experiences. Mm-hmm. So throughout the book, there are symbols that reappear. There are different illustrations that reappear, and every time they do, they take different forms. So the entire book is decorated with visual imagery that's designed to take you on a journey. That's why it's called a poetry experience. And there's a picture that you'll get that starts in the crawl space piece, and it's a picture of a shadow, kind of looks like a demon. And this is a passage about trauma that shows this little boy character in the book finally looking at that shadow figure that's been following him throughout the entire book. And you realize that the shadow figure is not some demon or some creature standing over you, but it's your own reflection. And this is that piece about trauma. The demon is not the wound still bleeding. The demon is the scar already healed. He will come back, just so you know, flickering in and out, the shadow puppet left on the wall of your childhood bedroom. He is not the enemy, he is the reminder. Just like you are not the enemy, you are the reminder. We never vanquish the demons inside of us, I'm sorry to say, because the nature of demons is immortality. But the nature of you and me is metamorphosis. You will never defeat him, but one day you will become as strong as he is, and at long last, you will call yourself equals. Metamorphosis is the power of the pain we overcome.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's beautiful.
Wow. Gets claps for that.
So before we move on, I want to ask you one last thing, and that is hopes and dreams. What does this book give not only to the LGBTQ plus community, but what does it give to any person that picks it up? What do you want this book to do for people?
Fuck yeah. I want you to feel like you are not alone. I want you to feel like my experiences are alive, that other people are here for me with my pain. I want you to pick up this book and I want you to say, first of all, anything is possible for me. And I know that sounds like a Disney Channel commercial, but it is so true. Anything is possible for me. You can be homeless. You can be addicted to Adderall, okay? Personal experience. You can be addicted to sex. Okay, you can be a part-time nymphomaniac living in some weird guy's house in Hollywood at 17 years old because you don't have a home and you could think you are so broken and that you have no idea what's going on and you can feel like you're living in a dual reality and you have no control over your head. And I want you to know that anything is possible for you when you take life in small steps and when you own the things that you've been through and when you give yourself the time to think really fucking critically about where you are in your life and where you want to go.
Can I get an amen?
Hello?
Amen.
Amen.
Seriously. All right. Well, listen, Joe, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah.
To talk about your book. You surprised a lot of us. You know, the content of your book is very personal, very deep. And it's something that, you know, you took the time to put to paper. And I am suggesting and asking for our listeners to take the time to explore. Because you might find something about yourself in this book, which is usually the case when you're reading something that's autobiographical, something personal, something deep that someone takes to paper.
And going into this book really is an exploration. It is an experience. And that's something that I'm so grateful that you were able to put out there for the public.
So we're probably going to ask you to do this later, but please plug yourself. Tell our listeners and our viewers where they can find you on social media. Do you have a website? Where can they get the book? Give us the lowdown.
Yeah. So my name is Joe Rapp. You can find me on Instagram at that Joe Rapp kid. It has been my handle since I was 15 and it's not going anywhere.
TM.
It's been my embarrassing AIM names for as long as I can remember for those of you.
AIM.
Remember that shit.
Oh, yeah. Dial up.
Yeah. For all you internet warriors out there, you can get my book on Amazon by searching The Map to Metamorphosis. I am releasing my hardcover next month, and I will be starting to write and illustrate my next book very soon. So I'm really, really excited.
That's awesome. Amazing. That's amazing. Thank you. Congratulations on an amazing book, and thank you for putting your feelings and your thoughts and your trials and everything on paper, because people will benefit from it.
Thank you for popping my podcast cherry.
The three of us were a little gentle. Yeah. Just a little gentle at first.
It is our pleasure.
And you're Gay Talk family now, so we look forward to hearing how the sales go for your hardcover and then for your next upcoming work.
Thank you.
Definitely keep us updated. You know, you can always call us in or Skype in from California.
Yeah, if you're out in Cali.
So it's always fun.
I'd love to do that. Totally.
Awesome.
Please.
All right. Well, listen, we've got a couple of more things that we need to cover before we wrap it up and go home.
She needs some chloroseptic.
I need something. Anyway, so I'm going to kick it over to Nick because we've got Mama Kim's Minute and we're going to do all that amazing stuff, unless you guys want to cover another story and then go. It's up to you.
Just jump into it?
Yeah. Jump into it. Okay. Let's jump into it.
All right. Let's do it. Okay.
All right.
Ready for Mama Kim's Minute, Nick?
No, I'm not. Hold on. I am not. Okay. I am now ready for Mama Kim's Minute.
Give him a timer.
And go.
All right, everybody, this is Mama Kim's Minute. So, Merriam-Webster's adds use of they, a gender non-binary pronoun, to the dictionary. Number two, there was an outpouring of love after this bisexual girl's grandma went viral. Lexi, a young bisexual woman, was getting ready to spend the day in DC Pride when most unexpected and wonderful thing happened.
Her story and her grandma.
And her, yeah, thank you. Number three, one
have gone viral.
One of the hugging toddlers from the adorable viral video has gone viral. Two dads, blah, blah, blah. John Van Ness from Queer Eye has come out as HIV positive. Oh, my God. I got to end it. That made me so nervous.
Yeah, I could feel your blood.
I fucking hit a button and it went somewhere else.
Oh, that's okay. It happens all the time.
So I was here to help. I was ready. Sometimes, like, I really want to let you crash and burn, but then I remember that I love you, so I am there to pick you up.
All right, well, listen, guys, one thing I did want to say about Jonathan Van Ness coming out as HIV positive, thank you for doing that, because, again, visibility is our greatest strength. I say that all the time. And you coming out as an HIV positive man, living healthy and an amazing life, helps others who are going through the same know that, you know what, you could be a successful television person, someone who has an amazing career ahead of him, and still be HIV and be human and absolutely be loved by millions.
And it's also important to add there, not that it's necessary to label oneself, but like Joe was saying, you know, you can do anything anything you put your mind to. He also came out as a former meth addict and a former sex worker. So
literally was going to say the same thing.
Oh yeah. No. So he literally was in, I would imagine in his life, the darkest corner of his life, and he has proven that he can get through that, he can overcome those obstacles, and he can really live a rich, fulfilling life for himself and those people who are so important to him.
So we applaud you, my friend. Thank you for being so visible and so positive in light of all the things that happen in this world. All right, so Gay Talk Term.
All right, everybody, this week's Gay Talk Term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com,
is Rose Tattoo. Bruise, especially one caused by excessive sucking.
Oh, it's in the back of the throat?
It's what happened to me over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Mm-hmm.
That is your Gay Talk Term this week.
All right, Christopher.
Let's continue learning on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
I just choked a little bit.
Of course you did.
So, on this day in gay history, when September 23rd, 1999, here in the US of A, the greatest country in America, the first celebrated Bisexuality Day.
Nailed it.
That's what I'm here for. The holiday, sponsored by BiNet USA, is intended to recognize and celebrate bisexuality, bisexual history, and the bisexual community. It has been recognized on this day every year since 1999.
It's amazing.
And we will continue
20
that.
Years.
20 years today.
That's awesome.
Math is hard, but I'm proud of you.
Listen.
I'm proud of you.
I know what I do. Anyway. All right. Listen, guys. Listen, if you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which gives you access to this amazing video stream that you get to see every week. And you can do so by making donations. We collect them monthly, and those donations can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Nick?
Next week, we welcome, finally, Mason Funk, author of The Book of Pride.
I'm excited.
We're looking forward to it.
There's so much amazing stuff in that book.
Absolutely. I love that we've had like a plethora of authors coming on with such great content.
I really had the opportunity to go through some of the stuff in that book. And let me tell you, the illustrations, the pictures, just the stuff. I was just like, wow.
Good.
Really good stuff.
We look forward to another experience here.
A lot
another
of good history.
Experience here.
All right, Christopher.
So yes, it's actually my turn to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our guest, Joe Rapp, for joining us. His book, The Map to Metamorphosis, a watercolor poetry experience, is available on Amazon, and we'll definitely make sure to have a link on our tonight's post so you can find out how you can get your hands on this, and we look forward to the release of your hardcover copy and your future work. So thank you so much, Joe, for coming on.
Thank you, guys. This has been so fun.
That's awesome. I'm glad that we were able to pop your cherry.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of popping a cherry, I'm ready for round two. Can we put a rubber on this, please?
Please do.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under Show and Episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, try to take it away.
All right. And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, suggest topics. You can submit a question for the cast or an individual host.
I missed the email, so keep it coming.
Or you can call us. You can do so by calling 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. See, I got this.
All right, I don't think you do.
Our new intern.
I hate them both really much, with all my heart.
Really much.
But anyway, don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, with that, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.